I was one of the delegates that helped to decide that piece of land, and I still remember how we paid $15,000 for it, and it was a place to go to on a Sunday to have fun and the children. That was a really nice place. Later on, the government took it and used it for something of the military. I don't know what, but it was used in the course of war, either for soldiers or something. And it is gone now. It's gone. And also, they had a beautiful, on Washington Street, they had a beautiful Turnverein, a solid building. A Turnverein is where men go for physical exercises and for getting thrilled. And I enlisted my boy real early in that because I thought he needed the male influence, having just a mother. And he liked it too, and that was lost too in that war. Somebody bought it up for cheap money. But such is the effect of what that man Hitler could do. It's unbelievable. Well, so much for my experience in the Bund.
Let me ask you a couple questions here. You said that it was the Bund is a union of the various German clubs.
Deutsch Amerikanischer Verband. A Verband is a union of clubs, you know. What would you say in English?
A union of clubs.
Clubs, yes. Deutsch Amerikanischer. And it was all over the United States. It had nature hiking clubs. It had bowling clubs. It had singing society, book reviewer club, and all that. All those clubs had representatives in the Bund. It had no political color at all. It was what the Germans should do among themselves, maybe if they were able to build a house or a camp or something like that, and a place to go to congregate.
Yeah, but there was a Los Angeles
branch. Branch, and a very active one because of those few young people that came from Germany and wanted to get us started here in Germany, you see? And we fought against it. And at first they had the help of the government. We were in the fog.
But there was a Los Angeles branch, and the various clubs sent delegates, and apparently they paid dues to the Bund.
Yes.
And in return, what did it do for them? It was the agency that had a building that all the groups could meet in.
Yeah. It also had a restaurant, and also you could use their facilities. For instance, we put on a concert once a year that always cost over $1,000, and that was a lot of money in those days. And so you could have the cooperation. They would all come and buy a ticket to the concert, and they supported each other, plus having a social function like the park, where all of the Germans could go and sing and drink their beer and take their children to something like that.
Okay, they have parks.
They bought that for the
And they had an auditorium
for for physical culture and for sport.
And then they had, was that the same place where you gave the concert?
No.
They had another building?
Yeah, we had the Hermannson Hall, you know, Hermannson. Sons are a club of men that come out of the history of the racial history out of Germany, the name, like the Woodsmen, too. They have a German branch. And they built the Hermannson Hall on 25th Street in Maine. It's still there. It's all Spanish today. But that was the building for the German clubs to go to and have their dances and their lectures and what have you. And the Turnverein, I don't know if they ever called it an English name. All we knew was Turnverein. Turn is exercise, you know, physical culture place. And there was that Father Jahn in Germany that started it to keep the youth out of alcohol and bad things, to bring them into sports life. And that got way big, and it got all the Germans in the different cities built one of those trunk lines in the city for the Germans to go there. A whole lot of Americans went too, you know. And it was a good thing, you know.
And what about, you said they had a restaurant?
In the Rats, in the trunk line, they had a Rats Keller. You know what a Rats Keller is? Always the restaurant in the city hall, in the basement where the Rats hand, the delicates go down and eat and all that. Every city has that out there. So they had a Rats Keller where they could go and have their German dishes like Sauerbraten and red cabbage and what have you. And the Hermanson Hall was strictly for the different blocks to meet too. There was a out by the Krankenkasse, for instance, this German started a workers' compensation insurance, and they met there, and they had also a workers' big singing club, and there was quite a little cultural life in Los Angeles of the Germans in those days.
But they were united, and they had quite a bit of money.
Well, you see, the Hermanson's Hall was built where the Germans, they could afford it, bought shares. Mm-hmm. And eventually it was paid off, and it's been sold to some Mexican organization now. And it turned around a private party board at that time for $90,000, which was outrageous, big sum then, but it had several buildings and pools and what have you, just like a half a block out there on Washington Street. You wanted to ask me anything else?
Okay. That's the thing that I wanted to know about the moon is, what services it gave back to the people who sent representatives to it.
Oh.
I think you've explained that.
Yes. And it was just sort of a tide. A uniting thing for all the German clubs. If they came as a stranger, they went to the Tunverein and saw what clubs they were and what they had doing and if they wanted to go, you know.
Did they help people find jobs?
Oh, not officially. They didn't have a, but the their newspaper, the German language newspaper, which was called the California Staatszeitung, had big ad sheets, and big, they would go to that, you know, to see if they wanted to locate a German, maybe before they learned to talk English or something like that. It was helpful in that way, next to the council, yeah.
What did the German council in Los Angeles think about all this? What was their attitude toward it?
Oh, well, they're an official body. Where we are, the Germans, for a social and political body, like the laborers, and I think of political, they had lots of Jewish members there before this that could talk German, you know. They also had in Saramacca, they built a nature's home, that's where I joined too for my son to learn hiking and to learn skiing and all the sports. I was so busy in business, I didn't have too much leisure. I had to keep the home up and all. So he learned from a young boy on in that club to go on trips. He's been up on every, slept up on the highest mountains here. And you know, that's the north. And in the high Sierras, they built no up above. They have a house up there where 40 people can go, and nearby is a ski lift. They learn skiing, and my son helped to build that. All the boys had to carry up on a hill, and they had to carry wood and stone and all that. See, it was always a community project, all these buildings. This home in Saramacca is near the city, near above Pasadena and all, in the canyon there, and gave people a place to go to in the open and for the kids to swim there and all. And this other place that's above San Bernardino, those mountains up there, up there, they have that house, but pretty far apart. And we were not so far below the highest place there of Mount Shasta. I used to hike all those things too when I was. That was a nice kind of recreation for me when you're indoors all the time. So until this crazy idea of Hitler came, there was unity and, you know, camaraderie.
But there was cooperation between it was Weimar Germany at least, there was cooperation between the consulate and the German club.
Yes. Oh, if you had anything that you had to know, like, it became closed here, didn't it, when we went into war against them, it was closed. But that's why at the time when it came that I got a letter from the German government, I thought first I should go to the German consulate and talk it over. But I was glad afterwards because our government told me to stay away and not answer, not do anything about it, that I was all right. And then, you know, my boy later on went on the German side with the Americans in the war. He was in the war the whole time on our side.
Yeah, he wasn't on the German side.
Oh, no. He says to this day, Mother, the smartest thing you ever did was come back to America and bring me here. I had that all in here, but that all would take us back too far to things I had told already.
Okay.
You see? I was trying to do this in a continuous way, you know. But I realized we have a lot of that already in what you've typed and what you've done. So now, are we on the air?
Yeah.
Yes. Have you got some more questions?
No, I think I explained about the German society.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, so do you
want
to talk about coming to Long Beach, or is there something else in between that you
want to? Well, I like to say that because everybody was so fearful about me being poverty stricken when I get older, my friend introduced me to this Peter Berger, to this lady, his husband that died. She had cancer and died pretty soon. And he had worked all his life for the Shell Oil Company, and he was in foreign countries for them, opening camps and things. He was superintendent. He was in Old Mexico and in South America and all over. So he had, was born in here, but German descent, and he saved his money so when he could retire.
What was the superintendent of?
Of the camps, the oil digging, oil company. Exploring camps, and when they were established, he went to run those camps.
Where they drilled for oil
down in Venezuela. He took four different, they called that a hitch, sign up for so many years, and he took such good care of his health. He didn't drink or cross around or anything, so he could go again and again down there. And after he was done it the fourth time, he thought, I guess, that he had worked long enough and hard enough. He retired in around 36. He wasn't old then yet at all. And then married, and they were only married about 6 years, and he used to say he didn't want a wife back home and do like all his men did that he had with him. That had another wife in these countries. And so when his wife died, that's when the time came that her friends told him that I was a good businesswoman. He was a good money maker and saver, but he was a very poor investor. When I married him, he had everything invested on 2% about. Well, it was the bad times, you know. The banks had crashed. He had lost quite a little, too. So he thought it would be about the best thing to do for him to build houses. He built about 10 houses in Inglewood, which later on, when we bought the apartment houses, he very foolishly insisted that we sell, because he couldn't stand debt. He didn't want to carry big mortgages, and he didn't want me to join any stores, you know, that get
charged.
Didn't want me cash. Everything had to be paid cash. He could have gotten immense rich if he let me invest right with such good start, you know. Well, we worked out of the war, and you know how that my son came back, which today I still say I had him on the Braille list of Unity all the years, and I just asked for nothing but that he would come back whole and not go the way of his father that died from war effects. And my marriage then to Mr. Berger was very happy marriage, you see. I was fearful and he was fearful. People would only get acquainted. I was just 50 when I got married. And you are used to making your own decisions and doing everything your way. You can't all of a sudden knuckle down to somebody else and be happy in that condition. So we were so fearful that we had a marriage contract made. And thereby, we had a year to see if we get along. Within that year, it could have been annulled because he didn't believe in wasting any money that way. But we often laughed about it, but we never needed it. And my son and him and became very good buddies. And when my son came back from the war, he got married pretty soon and completed his education then and never got away from the Navy. I mean, he worked for the Navy at Magoo. And he just now retired and wants to start out doing some hiking in the Alps in Austria and so on. So I got off the story now. I have to see where I...
You want to stop for a minute?
Yeah, please. The first apartment house my husband bought was in Highland Park on Echo Street, and it had 18 units. Now my job was to keep the tenants content and to run that, and I had closed up my beauty shop because I couldn't do both, and I didn't need that income anymore. So we left the equipment, moved the equipment out of the store, put it in our basement, and I tried to forget about it, but some customers still came around asking me to cut hair or do something. So finally, I just gave all my tools away, and I said, my husband doesn't let me. And that equipment I had tried and things, we sold them piece by piece, and that's how that ended. Now I devoted my time to the house and what the people needed. Everything was furnished, the linen, the furniture, the curtains, just everything. And that kept me busy fixing up these apartments. And the first thing that happened to us there, we realized that the house we bought was, the outside was mattress side. They didn't use it very long because in time this little stones that were mixed in the cement loosened and let all the dampness into the building. So we had to get a big loan to have builders come and tear that whole outside off. And we were under the OPA law. Those apartments were frozen for $15, and the front ones were frozen at $18, and they were beautiful apartments and nicely furnished. So, I thought, gee, that's something. Why in the world did they ever rent it so bad? No, this was before OPA came. because the rents were so low, because people were so poor. You were glad to get anybody to move in, no matter how low the rent was. So when this building was going on, and we had to have some front trees removed and all, I raised the rent. I didn't tell my husband. I raised all the $15 to $22, and the front went to $35, and didn't say a thing about it to him because he wouldn't let me. He wasn't that money-minded, and he would have been afraid of everybody moving out. Well, quite a few people moved out, naturally. And he said, "What are you doing to the people? They're all moving." I said, "Well, with this dirt and all and dust and this hammering going on, they can't stand it. It'll fill up. And I always quieted him that way. Well, this whole affair was going on every bit of 3 weeks. It was a big job. Well, when it got cleaned up and quiet and we done all the inside, the painting, there were layers and layers of wallpaper on every wall that we steamed off. We worked like the laborers, my husband and I, till we had it in shape. Then, slowly, things began to get a little better because they were also mounting up to the time where the war would. That seemed to go hand in hand. But before that happened, all of a sudden we were notified that the OPA would freeze our rent. And was I glad I had raised them a little anyway. After it was all filled again, and the OPA, my husband, said, "Oh, what a thing to do." He thought of his houses all being rented at $30 and some $28, and we were frozen that way with everything. So you get fearful in this respect. Your income is frozen on you, and you have no hope of it getting better, and you look for an out, and what is the out? But that you do silly things, which we did, in a way. It came out all right, but we did. When the Holland Park house was in order and was going, and we were under this law, we took a look, really a look, at the houses in Inglewood and how cheaply they were rented and families in there. And I said, why don't we buy another apartment house, a bigger one, and get rid of these houses? That's the only way you can get rid of those low rents and what the people were doing to those nice new houses. So we went to Long Beach because our best friends were in that business and knew Long Beach, and we soon found this Lyle 32 apartment. It was also frozen then, but not quite as bad. So many apartments bring a bigger income. And it was also under linen service and maid service and garbage collection. We all had on it. That was all frozen and with it. So we bought it anyhow, and I slowly learned a lot from my friends with as far as renting and things pertaining to that business, because you sure have to use your noodle too in that line, sizing people up and knowing who you get in and getting your rent and all that is quite a... And my husband said, "I had enough money to retire. That's your baby. You wanted the apartment houses." Well, anyway, we did this foolish thing that house had to be paid in cash, and so we sold those houses before you could get any kind of price for them. And that's where we lost a lot. I said, in 2-3 years, to him later, see what it would have been if we kept out. "Oh, what do you want more money for? Don't you eat every day and have enough clothes to wear?" He was so frugal about himself in certain conditions, but not money mad. That's why he gave it all to me to run, to have entrusted me. We had no trouble that way at all. Well, a lot of things happened, didn't we? Long Beach property, the government was after us to lend it. Now, we're in towards the war, and in the war. And we bought the house in 42, and the government wanted us to change over from vacationing people coming, that come every fall and every spring, to take government employees. You see, when the ships came in, they, a lot of the soldiers and officers had their families moved to Long Beach. And a lot of them worked in the shipyard. And the government wanted us to make a permanent rental situation out of it and rent it to the people that they needed in the war effort. So we did, and we rented it now only by the month, and I got together with the OPA, and they allowed me to keep stop with the linen, stop with the garbage disposal, and gave me all kinds of concessions that way. And we didn't need the help we had to have before, because they had to take care of their own apartments. And in a way, it was less income, but it was better. Better in the long run. Then we hired a man and a wife to keep it clean and to help us, and we could move someplace else. Then we had moved from Island Park down here. Oh yes, then we moved up to Highland Park to sell that, because that was 50 apartments that I was responsible for, and so far apart. One of the first things my husband bought me for me when we got married was a new automatic car, a DeSoto, a beautiful car. There was just one thing in it. He insisted that he's going to teach me how to drive. I couldn't go to no school and do nothing. And I was anxious to learn to drive at 50 years, and I had never owned it. Oh, we had a car, my son and I. Then I got married. We bought a second-hand car. Things had gotten a little better. But the old car he had, it was so old that ours was better than what he owned, but he kept it. He was so attached to his old car that he stood outside of the corner. And I had this light blonde bit to sew the own, was I proud. But the time I went through in our first months of marriage, till he had gotten me to drive, I used to sweat blood at night, dream about it, hate to get up in the morning because I knew he'd take me downtown driving. He didn't take me to places so isolated. After I knew how to make it go, I was able to go through that Figueroa tunnel every morning, a narrow tunnel where both traffic went through, and over to Pasadena and whatnot. It was an awful time, and we fought and we fought. And one time, I got out and slammed the door and walked away and didn't have a cent of money with me. I had to borrow a dime or whatever it was to get home. So, but we always got through those fights. I said, "You expect me?" Well, he said, "I think you would that some." So I tried to get my son teach me in between, but he was here yet. He wasn't gone to Germany yet. I couldn't learn from him at all. He had less patience. And so after half a year, by hook or crook, I got my license over in South Pasadena. I got my license. And, I was never so glad of anything as that I could drive, because he knew why he wanted me to get to drive. He was getting out of hearing, and he saw the day coming where he may not hear good enough, and he wouldn't have no transportation, so that was all to the good. And we owned this house, this little apartment, until the city needed it. But Long Beach was such a different place as it is today. It was the nicest place to come to, and the people were so nice. The sanctification of the mostly came from Iowa. They called us the little Iowa here. And you knew them, and then in the winter time, some would come from Canada and the north, and they were a nice kind of people, and it was a nice life. And Long Beach was about the cutest city you could amuse yourself down by the pike or take walks around the Rainbow Pier. You could go to the concert every day. There was something going on down there all the time, and we were within walking distance of this building up of the shipyards and everything, the lights and the glamour and the people. Long Beach underwent such changes so fast in those years because of the war. It was a sleepy kind of a seesaw place when we first came to it, where almost everybody knew each other, and two stores was about it, two big stores. And then with the war, it grew so fast, and things changed. We saw all the downtown of Long Beach being built, and I personally was in the city hall so much to almost every meeting of the city fathers, especially when it came to building the new civic center. Before that, it was all small cafes down there and a few parking lots, and Lincoln Park was a spot where everybody congregated. And down the beach, my husband used to go to the Spin and Argue Club, and you could go to Catalina, and it was really a nice city, and the beach was clean and nice, and kept cleaner than it is today. And there was our neighboring towns. I remember how we used to always go to San Pedro partly on the boat from Long Beach, and it had some interesting things too. The founding families had left their estates where you could go to and see, like the farm of the, I can't recall the name of the families right now, but we used to go and look at the way they lived and what they had, and still to this day it's up in the northern part of Long Beach. It's one of the Los Angeles Rodriguez, and then the farm out in the other part of City Hall. They all have Spanish names because of the Spanish original settling of law. I recently was up on a tour to the old Los Angeles settlement, the Spanish fathers, and it reminded me of the days we came here when we landed on Fifth Street in Maine. That was the old train station. I thought I'd never seen a city in my life like that. Los Angeles in 1932 in the Depression days.
What was so strange about it?
Well, compared to such a big, huge city, and so sprawling. I remember I came from New York and Newark and cities like that, Boston and all those cities. This was entirely different. You see, the people you saw on the street were mostly Spanish and Oriental, and, you know, those days you didn't see that on the East Coast. So the whole environment, the whole situation was different. I thought, oh my goodness, are they slow here? The day seemed to end to me at 4 o'clock. Everybody was going homeward. New York, I had to go to a job in New York at 6 o'clock in the evening. Work till 11 sometimes. It's a different, and it was a nice different once you got used to it. You got that tremendous big hurry of the city out of your system. And you know one thing that I went through, you came here in 32, or 33 was this big earthquake. I was up in Holland Park getting a permanent wave. Oh my goodness, the first thing I had could do was pull the electricity out of the wall. The whole room was going. And I had a lady, I said to her, does it do this here all the time? She laughed. Well, we ran out, me with the comb in my hand, and she with the curls sticking up in the street collar. Maybe the street car came along and all the people laughed. Pretty soon that whole street collar. And they ran out, they didn't laugh anymore, and we ran back into the building, being afraid that the telegraph poles were coming down. Oh, and I worried about my boy. Oh, my gosh, where is he? As soon as I could, and I had that lady loose, I didn't finish no permanent wave that day, I went home, and he said, Ma, isn't this fun? All right, I was depending on him that whole night when one shake after the other came. And then when I heard that what happened in Long Beach, where my friends were and over in that part of where the school children had just gotten out of the school in Compton, and I had a friend, he had friends that grew mushrooms in the fields in there, and through then we could get near Long Beach. Soon after, and oh, it was certainly devastating. If you had no business there, you weren't allowed in. No safe. And the Lyle that we bought had gone all apart. I still have pictures where the people were sleeping in Lincoln Park. And we didn't own it then yet. This was certainly 33. And it was brand new, and the man that built it lost it. And the prices dropped so after the, and he had put in so much money. I got acquainted with his son later on, and he took his life over it. He was such a poor man after that. And they had to put a retention wall in the island, build it up again, and we bought it in 42, and that earthquake was in March 33, so there were several owners in it, but when it came to sell it, they had gotten up an ordinance, the city of Long Beach, that damaged houses could only be sold for the price they were bought at, and that was it. Boy, it did done something to me, to my situation. But it changed their mind after a while, and I fought like heck. I said, I'm going to go to the law with that little bit of money and fight you. But they changed it. And now I realize what the transformation of the city and the people can mean. Now when I go downtown and walk up that Pine Street, oh, what a difference in one place going out of business after another because they want to build this new shopping center. But the early days in Long Beach were wonderful, nice, and the sunsets over that ocean, I still remember them. And we had a good life and good time.
Okay. You lived in the apartment house in Highland Park.
Yes.
And then when you bought the Lyle, did you move there immediately?
Well, we went up to the, we had bought a house. My husband had trouble with his bronchus, and he was advised to go into tri-climate. So we had moved out to Sunland, and it was from Sunland was running the house in Highland Park and then the new one down in Long Beach. And that got to be too much for me, and my husband wasn't too concerned about any of it. So we sold the Highland Park place then around 40 or something like that, and devoted and moved to Long Beach. And we first had a house out there again, and then moved to Long Beach and took it over for a while because we didn't have the right help while we were gone, and things weren't the way they should have been. So we moved back into the Lyle for about a year or so in one of the apartments. And then we, when it was all smoothly running and in order, we bought a own your own apartment in Long Beach on the east side, and we lived away from the Lyle then, just a bit later. And my son got married after the war too, and lived in Long Beach and worked for the government on the dock there for me. And that's how our life went. It was, to us, this day, Long Beach is our home. It would be more like home than any other place on the earth. And Long Beach is one of the cities that has such a good characteristic, all this new shoreline, the newer buildings, and all the old settled-in buildings of the first of the Long Beach of long ago. It's now in transition yet, but I guess someday it'll be a beautiful place here, you know, to get rid of all the old houses. I was so sorry that what it did down on Ocean, it was on the foot of not Chestnut Avenue, but one block more. They go over now to the Queen Mary. That was a beautiful old house, a two-story house, and they surely should have kept that for a landmark. And that went down, and many other houses around there that were kind of pretty and historic. It all had to leave for the new. They have, in Europe, for instance, they have strong laws, a strong definition what they can take down and what they can't. When I was out there, for instance, the last time, I was amazed that in Freudenstadt, that's one of the cities in the Schwarzwald Forest, had a stoplight and had high-rise houses. That fitted in there like my fist on my eye, you know, it's just so out of place. But that's what they call progress.
What are the changes that you noticed in Long Beach when the war started and the OPA came in and the Navy started bringing more and more people in?
Well, our way, or our business changed right there and then to go over to a different way of managing it. And so did other houses, all other houses. The city became, in a way, more stabilized. The many transients and the many vacationers stayed away. For one thing, we were so close to the shipyard, and you know how much we were fearing in those days that we'd get hit by Japan. And that kept a lot of people away. You know, you remember the days where we had a blackout hour. Windows every night, put black shades on everything, keep every light down. Oh, today, wouldn't they have a feast day of robbing? If we had to do such things, we went out and walked around and did our thing, even with the city dark, without lights. And, for instance, at the beginning, we were yet in Highland Park, and it took a big change there, too. Our basement, who was cemented out in rooms, reorganized for an emergency hospital. And my husband was one of the men that walked around at night. You know what?
A warden.
A warden, yes. We both went to the high school to take, refresh training and help, you know, medical help. And everybody was up to the war and their lives were, and then if you had sons, they were getting ready towards going to the war. All through the years my husband was a warden, a block warden, and it was just different. And then we moved in that time.